I could not but admire the cast iron integrity of that decision at the same time that I deplored its needlessness and folly. It was a curious study in telepathy, and I will record it exactly as it happened. I was much alone in those days, I am always alone a great deal, and with this strange business on hand I was avoiding all other entanglements and commitments till I should see how it was going to work out. I put aside my studies, even, in order that my mind might be tranquil and receptive, and was sitting quietly one evening beside my fire in the great hall. It was falling dusk, and I had put on the reading lamp at my elbow, not troubling to cross to the door to turn on the concealed lighting that filled the great room with a soft, tawny haze. The high windows stood uncurtained and dark, for though it was the night of the full moon, she had not yet risen. The ceiling was invisible in the gloom, and the far corners of the room were in shadow. Just around me, where I sat, the glow from the fire lit up the floor, but in my lap lay a pool of concentrated light from the shaded lamp, and in this my hands moved, working at one of my iridescent robes, sewing on the gold thread that lent brilliance to the soft luster of the silk. I had, I remember, a black diamond on one hand and a black pearl on the other, and as my hands moved, the savage black flash answered to the soft luster, like Isis and Nephthys. Then suddenly, not a yard from me, I saw the face of Malcolm. I have never seen anything so clear, short of a materialization. How did I know it was not my imagination? I will tell you how I knew. The eyes were alive and the soul of the man looked out of them. If I had called up his face in my imagination, the soul would not have been behind those eyes. Therefore I knew that I had not called up the image of Malcolm, but that he had come to me in an astral projection, and I wondered what it was that had brought him to the point where he had let his mind escape him. Did he know what he was doing? I thought so, for I had left my book with him, and if he had read it, he would have known exactly what he was doing. Then why was he doing it? That was a mystery I could not solve. I could only see that face, with its strange light eyes looking at me with concentrated attention. There was no attempt at speech and no expression on the face save of strained attention. But there it was, poised in the air before me. Whether the man were asleep and dreaming, or whether he were gazing at me with psychic vision, I had no means of knowing. There were the watching eyes, however, and there they stayed. From that time onwards I enjoyed the almost constant companionship of Dr. Rupert Malcolm, sitting quietly in my chair, going down the crowded street to do my shopping. It made no difference. Malcolm would appear, looking at me with those intent, expressionless eyes. One night I had gone to bed at my usual time in that great bed of mine which Mr. Maillard used to shake his head over as giving him unnecessary labor, I being a single lady. I was doing the usual meditation with which an initiate passes over into sleep, going down the long avenue of cypresses to my temple, when I found I had a companion. I had no need to look over my shoulder to see who it was, though hitherto our excursions into dream had always been over downland beside the sea. I turned, and looked my companion in the face, then, taking his hand in mine, I drew him level with me, and side by side we entered the temple of Isis, priest and priestess. I took the precaution, however, of drawing close the curtain across the Holy of Holies. We stood beneath the hanging lamp where burns the perpetual light, we stood in the center of the mosaic zodiac which symbolizes the universe and all that in it is, we stood facing the black curtain that is drawn across the Holy of Holies, and we worshipped as it is permitted to all men to worship, but to him it was not permitted to pass that curtain. Clearly, and repeating it again and again lest his psychism was not equal to bringing it through, I told my companion that he had the right of entry into the temple of Isis and was free to come into the worship. Then I left him, and myself went on through the black curtain. Concerning the Holy of Holies I may never speak, not even after this long time to explain my story. I may only say that the room is empty. Let who can pass that curtain and gain the priesthood, I may not draw it. I returned, and my priest was still there, kneeling where I had left him. I took his hand in mine again, and led him back, out through the lotus court and down the long avenue, At its end we parted, he to cross the river and return to earth life, and I to the house of the virgins for the night. Thenceforth I seldom had the temple of Isis to myself. Those who worked with me at times were also aware of his presence. Some resented it, and some, with more insight, knew he belonged. Then, on Christmas Eve, the culmination came. I was well used to the presence of my priest by now, and it had ceased to trouble me, either waking or sleeping. I had made the usual journey in meditation to the temple, and the meditation had passed over into dream, as it should, and I was standing facing my priest under the perpetual light, when my sleep was disturbed. The friend with whom I was in the habit of working was spending Christmas with me, and I thought I heard her come into my room. I was annoyed, for my dream was interesting, and I did not wish to be aroused. I knew she was a nervous person, and thought she had probably come in to tell me of some foolish psychic experience. I lay still, though awake, hoping that if she saw me thus, and the matter were of no real importance, she would go away again. But instead I felt a firm grip on my upper arms. She had evidently no intention of being put off. I could not very well be an inhospitable hostess, so with an effort I roused myself, to discover that there was no one there. I knew then, with an absolute inner certainty, who had been there, and had materialized sufficiently to leave black bruises on my arms. I sat up in bed. This, I thought, is a serious matter, for that which came was a complete materialization, and it had been projected over water. But there was nothing I could do about it, save wait and see. I had to wait some time before I saw anything more. Next morning there was dead silence, a complete vacuum. Malcolm had evidently succeeded in scaring himself as well as me. I missed my priest. The magnetic flow between us, which is the basis of the moon magic, had already begun, and I felt its deprivation. It made me feel flat, aimless, unsure of myself and my mission. But I was used to these psychic reactions and took them in my stride. They were unpleasant while they lasted, but they did not last long. I had a suspicion that although I had warned him not to speak of these things to any living person, Malcolm had taken counsel with someone who was helping him to resist my influence. I had no intention of forcing his will against his better judgment, but I had no such compunction with regard to that other person. We were, however, getting into the broken water that heralds the vernal equinox, and I was reluctant to try any psychic work under such circumstances. At the equinoxes, the vernal and the autumnal, all contacts break automatically as the astral tides change, and it remained to be seen whether I should pick Malcolm up again or not on the new tide. I might not, if he were recalcitrant, Isis might drop him, but if I did pick him up again, I should know that the work was going through. And sure enough, as the swirling astral conditions came slowly to calm water after the vernal moon, there was the astral form of Malcolm again, but it was only a pale shadow of his former self. Someone had intervened. Now what was I going to do? I had the power, should I use it? I hated the idea of using it arbitrarily, for a soul is a sacred thing to me. Yet some other person had used power arbitrarily. I made up my mind that, although I would bring no pressure to bear on Malcolm, I would thrust that person aside. As the new moon gathered power, I went up to my temple, which had already been resealed and rededicated on the new tide. I will tell what I did, for it is interesting. First I put on the pentacles, the great signs drawn in astral fire at the four cardinal points. I was already robed in the straight black robe and silver headdress of a moon priestess. Now I assumed the astral robes, imagining myself clad as befitted my grade. I felt the weight of the Uranus serpent arch itself over my brow, I felt the pressure of the silver kestos on my hips. In my hand was the astral ankh as well as the terrestrial one. With this I drew the moon signs and invoked with the greater names of power. The power came down. Every piece of ritual furniture, every symbol on the walls, was edged with light. The room was getting quite bright, though nothing save the lamp before the goddess and the perpetual light overhead were burning in all its shadow darkness. I laid the ankh back on the altar and took up the fire wand. I traced the symbol of fire upon the air, and little flames followed it. The smoke that was rolling off the incense in clouds became red-tinged. Then I called upon the goddess Sekhmet, the lion-headed one, and over my head I felt the head of a lioness formulate. I laid the fire wand back on the altar and took up again the ankh, the crux ansata, the sign of life, and with it I drew the magic circle and the triangle of art. Then I called upon my priest, and called him till he came. He formulated in the triangle of art. Then, round him and myself, he in the triangle, and I in the circle, I drew with the fire wand the circle of fire. The flames rose higher and higher till they were higher than our heads, a glowing heat came off them. With my eyes I held the eyes of the form I had evoked, and saw that the soul of the man was behind them. Aoo, beloved of Isis. Ai said, Aoo, you and I are alone in the circle of fire where none can intervene. You will do your own will and no one else. ? Then I slowly relaxed the power. The flames died down, the man's figure faded, and I did the banishing that released the psychic tensions and restored all to normal. The room was intensely hot. I think something would have gone on fire if I had prolonged the experiment much longer. I was dripping with sweat and completely exhausted. The whole experiment, including the preliminary meditation, had occupied less than half an hour, but I was 2 days getting over it. So much did I do for Rupert Malcolm, and I had my doubts as to whether he would thank me for it. If I had known for certain that I was never to set eyes on him again, I would have looked for replacements without missing a heartbeat. But as it was, there was an insistent urge behind me which said, Ao, this is the man for the work, he must, if possible, be got to do it. Never mind his feelings. Never mind yours. Personal feelings do not count in this matter. He will suffer and you will run risks, but the work must be put through. It is important. A then came the confirmation that is never lacking when big things are afoot, for those on the other side never expect one to trust blindly. My friend came to me and said, Ao hath had a strange dream. I dreamt that I was with you in the temple, and the priest of the moon came to me and told me I was to tell you that you must give the message. Inserted footnote, see the sea priestess. Do you know what that means? Ao, yes, Ai said, Ao do. Ao, will you give it? Ao, yes, I will. Ao, how? Ao, in my own way, A said I. Ao, rest assured it will reach the person for whom it is intended, but whether he will act upon it or not is another matter. A chapter 9. It was a stormy evening, the river was in flood. Sandbags were piled all along the Grosvenor Road and Mr. Meyard had got out the heavy boards that fitted into slots across the lower part of my front door. I had put on a Swerty Wester instead of my usual wide-brimmed felt hat and had gone down to the wharf to watch the flood water going past. It was a fine sight. I was absorbed in watching it, oblivious of all else, when I felt a touch on my elbow. Taken completely by surprise, I started. My foot slipped on the wet timber, and I all but went over the edge of the wharf. I felt myself gripped from behind by a pair of hands like a gorilla's and lifted into safety. I turned round to see the face of Dr. Malcolm, white as a sheet. Ao, my God, Ao, he said, Ao, nearly went in the river. I'm frightfully sorry, I'm afraid I startled you. I didn't mean to. I spoke to you. But you didn't hear. Ao, how did you know I was out on the wharf? Ai asked. He colored slightly. Ao, don't know how I knew, I just knew, that was all. I couldn't make anyone hear at your house, so I came on here. A we turned and walked slowly back down the short street. Dr. Malcolm walked with his eyes on the ground, never looking at me and never speaking a word. Ao, I'm glad you have come, Ai said, for the silence needed breaking. Ao should have been sorry if I had never seen you again. Ao have been pretty hard driven at the hospital, Ai, he replied. Ao, they are short-handed. My junior has been ill. Ai accepted this excuse, though I did not believe it, and presently he too thought better of it. Ao, as a matter of fact, I suppose I could have come if I had really meant to, but I couldn't get things clear. I couldn't adjust the relationship between you and the woman I had dreamt about. Aren't we the same person? I said I. Not altogether, I said he. Can't imagine you doing the things I have imagined her doing. I thought it best not to query this. We came to the big door. I inserted my key and got it open, but it was heavy, and inclined to swing shut of its own weight, and the knee-high floodboards made entry difficult. Will you give me a hand? I said and put mine out to him. He did so, but kept his eyes cast down, whether to avoid mine, or whether to gaze at my ankles, of which he received a good view, I do not know. So we arrived back in the house. What does this place always smell of? He asked as he came through the inner doors into the great hall. Different things, said I. Tonight it smells of frankincense. Why do you use that sort of thing? I said he. For its psychological effect, said I. He walked over to the fire, turned his back to it, and with his hands in his trouser pockets and his reefer jacket rucking over them like the feathers of an angry fowl, he stood staring into space, an extinct cigarette between his lips. It only needed a peaked cap cocked at an angle to make him look exactly like a ship's officer keeping watch. Presently he discovered that his cigarette was extinct, and pitched it into the fire. I'm sick of the central nervous system, he said. Who would have believed that this was the world-famous authority on the subject? He fished a crumpled packet of players out of his pocket, and lit up without asking my permission. There's been a hell of a row at the hospital. What about? Me, as usual. Tell me, Miss Morgan, do you think my manners are so very bad? They were, of course, simply vile, but I hadn't the heart to tell him so. Think you are very absent-minded, I said, and that probably makes you give offense without meaning to. Why can't the fools see I don't mean to? Probably because they are fools. Yes, they probably are. But I'm a fool outside my own line, and my God, don't I know it? That is the beginning of wisdom. So I have discovered. I hadn't meant to come and see you again, you know, until I'd got things straight in my own mind. And have you? No, I haven't. They wouldn't come straight. That's why I'm here this evening. I felt that this was a momentous confession, coming from him. You called me, he said, stating a fact. Yes, said I. Why did you do that? Because I wanted you. What do you want me for? That, I said, is a long story. You could, if you chose, be useful to me. He digested this for the length of a cigarette. Finally he spoke. I'll tell you how I'm placed. I noticed that he never asked me what use I wanted to make of him. I'm a married man. My wife's an invalid. She's down at the seaside. I used to go down and see her every other weekend or so, but her doctor told me to clear out. I was a nuisance, I only upset her. I'm on at the London and several places, but I could pack AM up if necessary. I fancy they'd be rather glad if I did, from what I've heard today. I've got to earn a certain amount in order to keep my wife going, but I could always do that. I don't need much myself. Beyond that, I am at your disposal. This sudden and complete capitulation took me utterly aback. It was the point at which I had known we should eventually arrive, but I only expected it to come by gradual stages, and how to handle my formidable recruit I did not know. My mind was a blank except for Hilaire Belloc's lines that kept repeating in it, "I had an aunt in Yucatan who bought a python from a man and kept it as a pet. She died, because she never knew some simple little rules and phew, the snake is living yet." I spoke, though my voice did not seem like my own, and he looked round at the sound of it. That is an extraordinarily generous offer. Too generous for me to take you at your word straight away. You must get to know me better, and learn what I am doing. Then if you care to repeat your offer, I shall be very glad to accept it. Very good. Fix things any way you like. I haven't the faintest idea what you want, but I'll do what I can. Then sit down, AI said, and I'll make you tea, and after that I'll talk to you. Obediently he seated himself in my own special chair. I drew the hot peat embers forward on the wide hearth, laid them on an iron griddle, and made scones peasant fashion. He watched me, absorbed, growing even more absorbed when the smell of the baking began to waft into the room. Finally he ate such quantities that I feared for his health. I put the tea things on the trolley and pushed them into the kitchen that had been a vestry, for Mr. Meyard to cope with at his leisure. My domestic methods are very simple, but perfectly efficacious. Then I slipped into my bedroom and changed into one of the loose, iridescent robes I wear in the house. This, I thought, would be good for Dr. Malcolm. It was, but beyond a startled look and a slight uneasy movement of the hand that held his cigarette, he gave no sign. I lit one of my own cigarettes, for it never occurred to my companion to offer me one of his. The hospital were quite right to tick him off for his manners. Nevertheless, he had offered me himself, asking nothing in return, and a man in his position had a good deal to offer. A four-figure income and, beyond any income, an enormous prestige. He was one of the royal physicians. "Ayo, tell me," AI said, "are you sick of the central nervous system? Ayo, it doesn't get you anywhere. Ayo, if you drop that, what will you take up? Ayo, endocrinology. Ayo, not psychology. Ayo, grrr, then you do not think that mind influences matter. Ayo, never found it did. But I'm damn sure that matter influences mind. I beg your pardon, I shouldn't use such language to you, but I keep on forgetting you're not a man. You're so dashed like a man. This was rather surprising in view of his reaction to my iridescent draperies. Ayo, don't mean your mind's like a man's. I mean you look at life like a man. Ayo, how do you know how I look at life? Ayo, know how you've handled me. No woman with an ordinary woman's outlook would have taken me the way you've done. They'd have been scared of me, wondering what they'd let themselves in for if they took me on. Ayo, how do you know I'm not scared of you? Ayo, you aren't, are you? Ayo, not in the least, but I wondered how you knew. Ayo'd hate you to be scared of me. You've absolutely no need to be. All this time I've wanted to apologize for the way I've behaved to you, before I knew you. I mean, you must have thought me mad, or a most horrible cad. Really, I'm neither. Of course I never dreamt there was anything in telepathy beyond music hall fakes. I've been reading your book, by the by. I suppose I ought to have kept my thoughts to myself, and not begun to imagine things about you, but I never dreamt you'd get on to it. I suppose the sin's in the intention, and if so, I'm a guilty sinner. I can't make out what your attitude in the matter is though, Miss Morgan. Ayo, if I told you my attitude, Dr. Malcolm, you wouldn't understand it in the very least. Not at present, anyway. You may, later. But I wish you wouldn't call me Miss Morgan. He turned pink, whether from pleasure at being asked to call me by my Christian name, or panic at being expected to, I did not know. However, I soon disillusioned him. Ayo, Morgan is not my own name, you know. I had to take it in order to benefit under a will, but I have never liked it. It just isn't Ayo. My own name is Lafay, and if we are to be friends I would sooner you used that. The other name jars me. Vivian Lafay, that is my real name. Ayo, Vivian doesn't suit you either. Too like something out of Tennyson. Ayo, you are quite right, it doesn't. I was called after the young witch in the Arthurian legend who beguiled Merlin to his doom, but I don't think I'm in the least like her. The first name my father chose for me was the right one, only the clergyman wouldn't let him use it. Ayo, what was it? Ayo, Lilith. Ayo, Lillian? Lilith. Ayo, who's she? Ayo, she was a friend of Adam's before he knew Eve, his wife. Some say she was a fallen angel, and some say she was a soulless spirit of earth. I believe the psychologists say she is the archetypal woman of man's collective unconscious. Anyway, she was a kind of demon, or so the churchmen said, though the Kabbalists did not. They said she taught Adam wisdom. But even after God, who did not approve of her, had replaced her with the mate he thought meet, Adam could not forget her. Some say it was really she, and not the serpent, who was responsible for the fall. Aom. I see, I said Malcolm. Ao, the archetypal woman of man's collective unconscious. Perhaps that accounts for it. Ao, for what? Ao, for my dreaming of you. Ao, do you really think so? Ao, he was silent for a minute, then, Ao, no, not really. My wife's name's Eve, Ao, he added. Ao, wish you'd tell me what you mean to do with me, Ao, he concluded irrelevantly. Ao, do you know anything of magic? Ao, conjuring? Ao, no, magic. Would you believe me if I told you I practiced it? Ao, yes, I should. You're so utterly unlike anything I've ever known, I'd believe pretty nearly anything you chose to tell me about yourself. But you aren't serious, are you? Ao, I'm perfectly serious. Would you believe me if I told you that you also practice magic? Ao, see what you're getting at now. You mean this queer sort of telepathic business that's been going on between us, that you wanted me to experiment with? But I thought that was spiritualism and not magic. Ao, isn't spiritualism a magic? Ao, is it? Ao, you take it from me, it is. Ao, do anything you like, Miss Le Fay. You want to do thought transference with me? What sort do you want to do? Ao, the same that you have been doing. Ao, my god. No, you can't mean that. You don't know what I've been doing. Ao, don't I? Ao, Miss Le Fay, you do not. Ao, Rupert Malcolm, I do. Ao, he sprang out of his chair. Ao, how much do you know? Ao, a good deal. But of course I don't know how much there is to know. Ao, you know I'm in love with you? Ao, yes. Ao, he stood rigid and immobile for a long minute, then, in a perfectly controlled voice, he said, Ao, what are we going to do about it? Ao, transmute it into power. Ao, don't know what you mean. Ao, that is the difficulty. I know exactly what I mean, but you don't. I shall have to tell you, and show you, and you will have to trust me until you see your way clear. Won't you sit down and let me talk to you? Won't you sit down, Rupert? Ao heard him catch his breath, but he dropped down into the chair and lay back in it. Ao, you know how I'm placed, Ao, he said. Ao, for I told you straight away. Ao, know exactly how you are placed, Ao said. Ao, and I shall never put you in any position that will embarrass you. Ao, don't see how you can help putting me in a position that will make things pretty difficult for me. Ao, too difficult? Ao, yes, I'm afraid so. Ao, more difficult than they will be if you break with me? Ao, he put his hands over his face. Ao, oh, my god, I don't know. Ao, I did not want to push this reserved man to the point when he would lose his self-control, so I spoke calmly and impersonally, as if we were consulting over someone else's case. Ao, there are three things we can do. We can break with each other completely. We can disregard the conventions and go the whole way underscore. Ao, you aren't proposing to do that, are you? I said Malcolm sharply, looking up. Ao, couldn't do that. Ao, I'm not proposing anything, Ao said. Ao, I'm simply analyzing the situation at the moment. Ao, he colored and looked down. I continued, Ao, we can break with each other completely. We can go the whole way, or we can use the power that flows between us for magical purposes. Ao, that, of course, is a matter beyond my comprehension, I said Malcolm. Ao, but I know this, that although we might postpone the decision by working magic or whatever it is, we shall have to come to it in the end. I know my own nature, so I give you fair warning. I have managed to keep straight so far by avoiding temptation. I am not by nature a pure-minded man. I have to wrestle with wild beasts at Ephesus. If I see much of you, feeling as I do about you, I shall have a very difficult problem on hand, and if you give me an inch I shall probably take an L, and we shall both be sorry afterwards. Ao, if we work magic together, Ao said, Ae, it will drain off that force and make life much more manageable for you. Ao, as to that, I cannot express an opinion. I have never had any experience of magic, nor ever expected to, Ao, he added with a faint smile, which told me that the worst of the emotional crisis was now in hand. Ao, will you take my word for it that it is as I say? Ahe hesitated.